Appropriately, during the week of the Green Bay Packers Hall of Fame induction ceremony, we take a look back in Packers history. Our guest on today's show is Evan Weiner, author of America's Passion, How a Coal Miner's Game Became the NFL in the 20th Century. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Welcome to Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're talking about the upcoming Green Bay Packers Hall of Fame induction ceremony taking place this weekend. To do that, we're taking a look back in Packers history today. We have a guest on the phone, Evan Weiner of Sports Talk Florida and author of America's Passion. Mr. Weiner, how are you doing this morning?
Oh, we're good. Real good. Just another summer day here in New York with 100% humidity and some rain. But other than that, it's July in New York, so that's what happens.
Good to hear that. I wanted to talk to you this morning about your book, America's Passion, and kind of take, as I mentioned, a look back in Packers history this morning. In your book, you mention an IOU, Curly Lambeau, in the Packers' loan to George Halas and the Chicago Bears, and kind of the impact that had on the rivalry. Can you share a little bit more about the background on that little known story?
Yeah, in 1994, I was up in Green Bay for the first time, actually, and I had known Lee Remmel for a very, very long time. Of course, Lee Remmel was the keeper of the gate, so to speak. He was the Packer historian. And Lee said to me, "I want to show you something." And I said, "What are you showing me?" He said, "I want to just show you how deep this rivalry between the Chicago Bears, or the Decatur Staleys, as a matter of fact, and the Green Bay Acme Packers go." And, of course, they were both integral parts of finding of the league coming together with Curly Lambeau and George Halas. Apparently, Halas had some problems meeting a payroll during the Depression, and believe it or not, Green Bay had some money. And there is an IOU that George Halas gave to Curly Lambeau. I don't know if it was ever repaid or not, because Lee didn't know if it was ever repaid or not. And what happened was that can we start this again? Let me just do this. This is my wife calling. I got to find out what's going on. Is that possible?
You want me to call you back?
Yeah, call me back in 2 minutes. Let me see what there is a problem. So let me hear what the problem is.
No problem.
She never calls me.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay. Right. Bye bye.
That was unexpected. I'm not sure how to react to that. I can certainly understand if there is a family issue that they want to take care of that. So we'll just have to vamp here on today's show for a few minutes while Evan Weiner gets his business in order. But we'll allow him to do that. So welcome to podcasting. I just thought having a person who wrote a book on the history of the NFL would be appropriate for today's show, with Brett Favre being inducted into the Green Bay Packers Hall of Fame on Saturday, the induction ceremony taking place. And of course, this has been a big deal in Packers history. Because you probably heard the story how, the induction ceremony takes place inside the Lambeau Field atrium, kind of a smaller, intimate event, a lot of sponsors getting tickets for that event and things like that. But with so much interest in Brett Favre being inducted into the Hall of Fame, they wanted to open it up to more people. And you couldn't do that by packing them in the atrium. They sold tickets to the bowl at Lambeau Field. I'm not sure if they're filling the luxury boxes, but the bowl of the stadium is basically sold out, as I understand, something like 67,000 tickets. People will be watching the induction ceremony on the Jumbotron video boards. Brett Favre will come out to address the crowd, and it should be a nice moment for what's going to happen here with Favre and the rest of the Green Bay Packers. So looking forward to that this weekend, and kind of in with it being so much attention, this year's ceremony only honoring one individual, that being Favre. Typically in other years, there's more than one player being inducted, usually two, and sometimes they induct a contributor as well, maybe somebody who wasn't a player but had a profound impact on the Packers organization. Someone, whether it be in the front office or it could be any role, a person like Lee Remmel of the Packers, public relations department, like Evan Weiner talked about before. So anyway, let's get Evan back on the phone here, as I've tried to vamp for the moment being, but here we go. I'm going to go through my contacts in the phone here. This should do it.
Evan Weiner.
Mr. Weiner, Brian Caribou here, 24/7 Sports.
My wife had a problem that needed to be solved, which is solved. So
good.
Let's start again. I'm sorry about that.
No problem. We are live on air, so but if we could just pick up where we left off, with the story about Lambeau and Halas.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so Lambeau gives George the money, and George meets payroll. Now, like I said, I don't know whether or not George ever repaid the loan. However, in the 1950s, remember, the Packers had a problem with the stadium, and the Packers were a very financially weak stadium in the weak team in the 1950s, and did a new stadium, and there was no real push from anybody to build a Packers stadium. Milwaukee had built County Stadium with public money, but the Packers couldn't get what they needed. And there used to be fundraisers that took place across Wisconsin. And guess who was the main speaker at all those fundraisers?
With Lee Remmel?
No. Back when the Packers were holding these fundraisers, guess who came as the lead, as one of the lead fundraisers for the Packers?
Oh, George Halas.
George Halas. So when people talk about this rivalry, and it is a blood rivalry between the Packer fans and the Bear fans. And of course, you got that little space in between southern Wisconsin and northern Illinois where you could have either fan base, the Packers or the Bears. And the fans don't even know that possibly, it's highly doubtful, but possibly without Curly Lambeau, if they beat no Chicago Bears, because Curly, when you default on a payroll, players generally don't want to play for you anymore. And Curly came up with the money, and the IOU, there's this piece of paper, which literally says you X amount of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Bears and Packers rivalry, which is very important to both Green Bay and Chicago. It's like New York and the Eagles, New York and Washington, New York and the Cowboys, or the Cowboys and the Eagles, or the Redskins and the Cowboys, or the Eagles and the Redskins, which are all blood rivalries. That is the blood rivalry in the Midwest, and it may be the best rivalry in all of football.
It is the oldest, so that is a cool story, kind of how that has impacted the rivalry. Another good story from the book America's Passion, and one that many people probably don't know, is the one how Ben Agajanian was traded to the Green Bay Packers. Can you explain the circumstances that led to that trade?
Vince Lombardi needed a kicker. Paul Horning was doing his Army stuff, And Jenny and Vince went back a long time. They went back to New York. In fact, the story about Ben is pretty interesting. He was pretty successful in a business on the West Coast, and he used to fly in to New York to New York Giants home games and also fly wherever the Giants were. He used to come in on Friday or maybe Saturday, pick and leave right after the game to go back to his business. So he and Vince had a very long relationship, and this is in the days of the AFL and the NFL, where allegedly the both sides didn't like one another, and Vince needed a kicker, and who is a viable guy for Vince to come in than Booting Ben? And Booting Ben is an interesting guy. He is the only guy who played in the All-American Football Conference, the National Football League, and the American League, American Football League. And he was a friend Lombardi and with Tom Landry, and he ended up with Landry being the Cowboys kicking coach. So that's the New York connection with Booting Ben. And so Lombardi looked for him. He found him. He was with Oakland, and Oakland needed money and needed whatever they needed to keep going in the American Football League. So there was a deal that was hatched up between Lombardi and the Oakland Raiders, and Booting Ben ended up with Green Bay Packers because Paul Hornung was serving his country.
Just interesting how those that stories, all worked out.
You know, but those stories back then would never happen today. I mean, you know, back then, the NFL and the AFL, particularly the AFL, Lamar Hunt, if he drafted a player, I'll give you an example, Alex Kroll, who ended up being drafted by Lamar Hunt's Dallas Texans. Who else he was drafted by? But anyway, he was drafted by both. And Lamar said to Alex, he said, let me ask you a question. He said, do you want to play here? And Alex said, I only want to play one season. And that's it, just 1 year in football, because I got a job with a big advertising agency in New York, and Sonny Werblin had just purchased the Jets, and Alex was at Rutgers. Sonny Werblin was a Rutgers alum. And Alex told Lamar, I want to play 1 year, and Lamar said, okay, you can play in New York. And those things happened in both leagues. So the Agenian story, which is interesting in a sense, the Agenian story did happen. And in those days, even though there was that AFL-NFL rivalry, the owners accommodated players, and Agenian was accommodated.
Interesting. I think I have heard that he is the oldest current living Packer. I think that's coming from the Green Bay Press Gazette, if I remember hearing that correctly. So that is kind of interesting to hear that now. I also understand, Evan, that you have an anecdote about Jim Taylor, too, the Packers Hall of Famer. Could you share that with us?
Oh, yeah. I was up in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania about 20 years ago, and I had an hour and a half with Concrete Charlie, Chuck Bednarik. And Bednarik and I were talking, and we were talking about how he broke in with the Eagles and they won a championship, and how he basically left football with a championship. And they're at Franklin Field, and Green Bay's coming up to the field. And remember, it's late, very late in the game. And Taylor gets the ball, and he runs up the field. And Bednarik tackles him. There are 13 seconds left on the clock, and Bednarik is in absolutely no hurry to get up. He's laying down across Taylor, and he's not letting him up. And he's counting down, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, two, one. Okay, you blankety blank blank. The game's over. You could get up now. We won.
that rings to that just a few years ago, the very similar situation happened with the University of Wisconsin football team. How play was kind of stalling at the end with time running out. So that kind of hits home a little bit, I think, to people in Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Bednarik had lots of stories. That was his only Green Bay story, though. But he had lots of stories, including the famous one about Frank Gifford, who he laid out on the field. And it wasn't a dirty tackle. I talked to both Frank and Chuck about it, just an unfortunate thing that happened on the football field. But, yeah, Concrete Charlie, he was a tough guy. In fact, when I shook hands with him, he's keep my pinky finger straight, or should I put it out sideways the way it normally is?
You mentioned before what one of the people you interviewed in your book, former Packers public relations director Lee Remmel,
a sweetheart.
A great sweetheart. He just passed away a few short months ago. Can you share any memories of him personally as a person?
He was so helpful. He was just so, so helpful. He was great in terms of access. Now, you got to remember, I'm working with John Madden's radio show. I worked with John from 1988 to 2003 when the show went off the air. And so when you're working with Madden, well, that's your first pass. I mean, hey, you're working with Madden. If Coach wants you doing stuff with Coach, that's cool. You know, and Madden had a soft spot for Green Bay. So, you know, Madden says to me, you're going to Green Bay. And he never knew my first name. Wiener, you're going to Green Bay. Because if he knew your first name, he didn't like you, John. You know, you just work with him. If he called you by your last name, he liked you. And I spent more time with John than Ken Stabler did. Blitnikoff did. I spent 15 years with him. I mean, far more than a normal human being should have spent with John. 15 years with him. Anyway, so he says, you're good. I said, yeah. He says, go see Lee Remmel. He'll take care of you. And Lee did. I mean, and when the Packers used to come to New York, first guy you see with the Packer delegation was Lee Remmel. And it was really, he was really nice to deal with. He had stories. The hell story with the IOU, obviously, was that he talked about Citi Field. He talked about Citi Stadium. He talked about the Packers, and we kind of knew some people. We talked about how the Packers back in the 1950s, the team wasn't the last stop in the league. If you didn't make Green Bay, you could still make Pittsburgh. If you didn't make Pittsburgh, you didn't make it anywhere in the NFL. A team that was even more lowly regarded than the Green Bay Packers back in those days. And it was Pittsburgh. And obviously when Vince Lombardi came in, he turned the entire culture around. But you know, in the 1950s, the NFL was nothing more than a mom-and-pop store ragtag operation and, you know, a step above semi-pro. In fact, Stan Jones, who played with the hated Bears, right? He was telling me that back in the day, that if you wanted to find George Halas between January and July, you found them at the Halas and May Sporting Goods Company down in the Loop. There was no Chicago Bears office during the off season. So that's the way it was back in the day. And I asked Lee, and he said the same thing up here with Green Bay.
Interesting. How it's changed since then.
I'll give you a quick story about John David Crow, who just passed away.
Okay.
And John David Crow won the Heisman Trophy in 1957 at TCU. He said when he got to the Chicago Cardinals, he couldn't believe that was three steps down from TCU.
Really?
Yes. That was the NFL back in those days. When Lombardi got to Green Bay, the NFL, I mean, the NFL, other than a semi-professional operation with the New York Giants, and that semi-professional is putting it in quotation marks. I mean, yeah, the league just went on, but it wasn't any big deal. I mean, the team somehow managed to get back on the field from year to year after 1952. But if it wasn't for Lamar Hunt coming in with the American Football League, I don't know where the NFL would be today.
Yeah, yeah. I certainly can see how it's changed since, you know, back in the 50s to where it is today. We're talking to Evan Wiener, author of the book America's Passion, here at Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning. Another person interviewed in your book was former Packers offensive lineman Jerry Kramer, who shed some insight into the first Super Bowl. Kramer always seems to come up in these conversations about the best players not in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I guess my question is to you is, does he deserve to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
I think Jerry Kramer and Gil Hodges suffer from the same malady in that there are too many Brooklyn Dodgers in the Hall of Fame, yeah, and there are too many Green Bay Packers in the Hall of Fame. You know, Hall of Fame voting is not an exact science. In fact, in Hall of Fame voting in both baseball and football and in hockey, there's a lot of people who break off and, you know, well, yeah, we should support this guy, and then there are lobbyists and this and that. I don't know why Kramer is not in the Hall of Fame. He's the best player probably out there. But, you know, the New York Jets had a player by the name of Winston Hill who was voted on the all-AFL team as an offensive tackle. I forgot if he was first team or second team. And he never gets a sniff in the Hall of Fame. And Joe Klecko, who played with the Jets, made All-Pro at three different positions, not in the Hall of Fame. So I have no idea how the Hall of Fame in football operates or baseball. Baseball is a little more straightforward. But first of all, most of the guys who are voting today never saw Jerry Kramer play.
Yeah.
You know, probably the only reason they know of him are two things, the instant replay book and probably the old, Run to Daylight TV special from way, way back when. But Jerry and I were talking one day, and this is a long time ago, and we're talking about the first Super Bowl, and as the guy he called affectionately the old man, Max McGee, who I was pretty close with, who I really enjoyed, also called him the old man. Of course, Max was Vince's alter ego. Max was everything that Vince wished he could be, but never did. In fact, Bart Starr told me that. Bart Starr told me that. Royce Broyles, who wrote a book that I'm in on the Green Bay Packers, Lombardi's Left Side, told me that. Mm-hmm. And Kramer told me that. He said, everything Vince wanted to be in life that he couldn't be was Max McGee. So anyway, Kramer is telling me they get on the field in Los Angeles, and Lombardi's favorite player, even though Max McGee probably would have disagreed with me, but Lombardi's favorite player of all time was Frank Gifford, who and Vince, for lack of a better term, back in those days, was the offensive coordinator of the New York Giants, and Gifford was his best player on the offense, and they were close. And Kramer told me that before the Super Bowl, there was, if you look at the video, and the video unfortunately doesn't exist because neither CBS nor NBC bothered keeping the video of the game, which is ludicrous, absolutely ludicrous. But Kramer said that, you know, he's walking out in the field and he sees the old man, and he says he sees Frank Gifford interviewing him. Gifford, he said, is kind of shaky with his microphone talking to Vince, and Vince is kind of shaking too. And the reason why was pretty simple. First of all, Vince didn't want to play in the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at how the Super Bowl came about, it wasn't even called the Super Bowl. There was no Super Bowl, and there was no Lombardi Trophy at that point.
Yeah.
Now there's the Lombardi Trophy, and the Super Bowl, of course, is worth whatever it's worth. But that was a shotgun marriage. In October of 1960, Congress passed the bill on the back of an anti-inflation bill that the American Football League and the National Football League could merge. Lyndon Johnson signed it into law, and they had about 30 days to put together the Super Bowl, and that's the only Super Bowl, and it was called the American Football League National Football League World Championship Game, and it was put together. It's the only Super Bowl that has never sold out. It was only two-thirds sold out, and Lombardi said, and Kramer told me, Lombardi said, hey, we won the NFL championship. We beat Dallas. Why are we playing the Mickey Mouse League? And Hal Uplinger, who did Live Aid in 19, whatever that was, it was 30th anniversary of Live Aid, 1985, who I worked with in 1984 as he was trying to put together this thing called the Sports Radio Network, which never really took off the ground but was the predecessor of everything else that you hear today.
Mm-hmm.
He left there to go do this thing called Live Aid. But Hal in the 1960s was Lombardi's producer on CBS. He did all the Packer games, all 14 of them plus the playoff games. And he told me, he said, Vince was a nervous wreck. And he said, and Kramer told me this too, the whole weight of the NFL was on Vince Lombardi's back, that he had to win the game, and he was as nervous. Hal told me he never saw Vince that nervous. Kramer told me the same thing, never saw Vince that nervous. And you got to understand what was going on. This was the prestige of the NFL. For 6 years at that
I guess we lost Evan Weiner once again here. maybe I'll just try to wrap up the interview here. It's kind of been an interesting episode, to say the least.
We lost you there.
Yeah. So to
We
wrap up,
lost you.
anyway.
But anyway, getting back to Hal Uplinger and Jerry Kramer, they both gave me the same story 10 years apart about Lombardi. Uplinger, from his viewpoint, was it was CBS versus NBC. It was William Paley versus Sarnoff. Sarnoff gave the AFL the contract and enabled them to compete with the NFL and signed Joe Namath, and the NFL signed Tommy Nobis, but all those other guys. So you had the rivalry between the two networks, which went back to the 1930s with the NBC Blue Network and the NBC Red Network and the CBS Network. So you had that. You had the official car of the AFL, which was Chrysler, against the official car of the NFL, which was Ford. You had the Wilson ball that was, I think the Wilson ball was used by the NFL, and you had the Spalding ball used by the AFL. You had the writers all lined up, you know, behind the NFL, and then you had your AFL writers. You had Tex Mall in Sports Illustrated for years and years and years talking about the vast superiority of the NFL versus the AFL. So under those circumstances, Lombardi is like, oh man, it's not just the football game. And it wasn't just the football game in 1967, January 1567. It was more than that. It was car companies against one another, networks against one another, ball companies against one another. It was really ridiculous. I mean, it was totally ridiculous. And then on top of that, nobody ever saved the tape. If this was such an important event, why didn't CBS or NBC bother saving the tape? They erased the tape. There's no tape that exists of this game. The only thing that exists of this game is what NFL film shot. That mm-hmm. was it, and they shot every play, so they stitched the game back together. For years and years and years, there's been a wide net cast looking for the video of the game. Now, in the 1950s, baseball World Series games, most of them were intact. Mm-hmm. Some of them aren't intact that were sent out to the armed forces. They were hoping that somebody had the game intact that was sent to, say, Vietnam or Korea. It wasn't found. Nobody has this game. And there's like the NFL has offered something like $5-7 million reward if you could find the video of this game. Nobody has. They erased it. They didn't think it was all that important, and yet for Lombardi, he's got the whole weight of the world on his shoulders.
Interesting how it's come full circle, and now it's the multi-billion-dollar event pretty much in the world. So,
well, you know how the name Super Bowl, a bowl, came up.
The ball, right? Super Bowl.
Yeah, it was the ball. And I talked to Roselle one day, and he said, that was a corny name. He said, I didn't like it. He said, corny? I said, corny? I haven't heard that expression. He said, corny in the 1940s and 50s. That was a big expression for Roselle and the people of that time, because, you know, the NFL owners at that time came up in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. But they couldn't think of anything better, and they wanted a short name. And they never trademarked the name initially. Never trademarked the name. It took them a few years to trademark the name because they didn't, you know, Lombardi's Packers basically methodically went through the Chiefs and Packers. Had the Jets not won the Super Bowl, and this is the only reason Joe Namath is in the Hall of Fame, had the Jets not won, had the NFL won again, it would have proven everybody, well, the AFL is an inferior league. Namath actually makes the Super Bowl. And I've been told the story by a number of the former Packers who visited Lombardi when he was passing away, before he passed away. And Vince knew Joe was responsible for things. Mm-hmm. And they all told me the same thing. And Kramer and Joe Namath became very friendly. And they said, Vince kept saying, Joe, you're not bigger than the game. And you know, that state that people get in before they pass away with all the drugs and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that was the Super Bowl. And obviously the Packers have a very rich history in forming the league and in the league being the ragtag operation and in the Super Bowl. And, you know, and it's the Lombardi Trophy, except it wasn't the Lombardi Trophy. When the Green Bay Packers won the championship, it wasn't the Lombardi Trophy.
To come full circle here and talk about a little, you know, more recent football history, I guess, Brett Favre being inducted into the Packers Hall of Fame this weekend. Do you think Brett Favre is a first ballot Pro Football Hall of Famer in Canton next year?
He should be, but who knows what the politics of Canton is. I can tell you Art Modell never made the Hall of Fame because Tony Grassi, who is the Cleveland Plain Dealer writer, made an impassioned speech how he ruined his lifestyle as the Brown beat writer after Art Modell left. Who knows? I mean, who knows how these guys vote? In theory, he should be, you know, that's a no-brainer. He should be in. He's won a Super Bowl. He was one of the best quarterbacks of his era. Joe Montana was around, and he's obviously a Hall of Famer, but maybe Joe is better than him. Phil Simms is not in the Hall of Fame. Phil was pretty good, but he's not going to make the Hall of Fame. Washington won with, you know, multiple quarterbacks. They won the Super Bowls. Jim Plunkett isn't in, but Favre, you know, Favre was your prototypical old school quarterback. He was the gunslinger going back to Bobby Lane. He made the game interesting. There was nothing safe with him. And you probably know that better than me. I got to see him up close just 1 year every game with the Jets. And, he's an exciting player. And there's no reason looking at the record, looking at the body of work, that he shouldn't be. Now, you're going to have guys who say, and this is what happens on the other end, he hung on too long. Mm-hmm. He should have just retired. He should have left with Green Bay. And there was also the thing, he never helped Aaron Rodgers. These are the arguments that are going to come up. Stupid arguments. Hey, black and white. The guy won. The guy was effective. He was the reason they won. He was the reason Green Bay did as well as they did. The end. Simple. As Madden would say, hey, did he win? Yeah. Case closed.
That would be a short conversation about...
I'll tell you what, when you talk to John, John talks in commas. He talks in commas. Hey, did he win? Yeah. Case closed.
Yeah, I think people can get that impression from listening to him on the games on Fox.
He's actually a pretty shy guy, you know. There's a TV personality, TV persona, and then there's John, if you get to know, who is the English major. He went to school being an English major and a substitute second grade school teacher, which he was before he became John Madden. Can you imagine he's your substitute teacher in second grade and that head comes in and those ham hock hands come in? You're not going to fool around with this substitute.
No, not. He seems like he could relate to that, though. He's got that bubbly personality that could engage a second grader.
Yeah, he was a second grade substitute teacher, believe it or not. And I can imagine all those kids who were in second grade remembering back, hey, he was our substitute teacher at one point. As far as Madden, Ron Wolf was the top. Of course, Ron Wolf went back with Madden a long time. Ron Wolf was the Turk in Oakland, if I could deviate here for 1 second. And Ron Wolf used to dress up as the hangman to go to the rooms to knock on the door saying, coach wants to see you, bring your playbook with you.
Oh, man, that's...
But that's how you survived in the NFL back then.
Yeah, I guess so. Evan, it's been great taking a trip down memory lane here. Can you tell our listeners how they can purchase your book?
Yeah, it's online. It's an ebook. Actually, it was Madden who suggested I do this book. Actually,
okay.
He said, "Hey, you got all these stories." He said, "Put together a book on that." And And I did. He said, you know, those stories, he said, you know, a lot of the people who the stories are from now have passed on, but they're great stories, mm-hmm. talking about how the NFL became the NFL. And it's an ebook, and you can get it at Apple and Smashwords and Nook and all the other ebooks that except Amazon, because Amazon and I have a little problem with, like everybody else with Amazon, which is why there are class action suits against Amazon, which mm-hmm. I won't talk about right now. And it's one of five books I have. That one, and I got a basketball one, which is very similar. In fact, there are some old Milwaukee Hawks stories in there when the Milwaukee Hawks actually existed back in the 1950s when they were the Tri-City Hawks. Same exact book, same exact premise, because when we're doing the show for Madden, we're doing all these interviews, and the guys from the 1950s had the best stories. They had the greatest stories because they can't be duplicated today. So anyway, the books are available online at Apple and Amazon, not Amazon. One book is on Amazon, but Apple and Smashwords and Nook, and if you're in India, you could get it through Flipkart in India. If you're in Australia, you can get it in at Collins Books. Believe it or not, the NFL, the American Passions book, has sold exceptionally well in Europe and in New Zealand.
Interesting.
And New Zealand, to me, is really interesting because all of a sudden I heard there's going to be a game being played by non-NFL players in New Zealand, and I'm kind of like figuring, why is my book selling in New Zealand? But apparently the NFL and football people have identified New Zealand as a place. Who knows, maybe the Green Bay Packers one day will play in Wellington or Auckland, New Zealand, and I sell, you know, more books in Wellington than Auckland.
There we go. Evan, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate it. Like I said, a trip down memory lane. It was great to hear these stories from you, and we'd love to do it again sometime.
Sure. During the football season, no problem. I got plenty of stories, believe me.
Good. Well,
believe me, and including we missed the best one, which is Chuck Morcin and the picture of him with his hands up and Bart Starr going in the end zone in the Ice Bowl.
Perfect. That gives us something to talk about next time then.
Yep.
All right.
Okay, have a good day.
Yep. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Evan Weiner, author of America's Passion, here at Railbird Central on a Wednesday morning. We had a few fits and starts there, but hopefully we made up for it with a nice extra long interview on today's show that probably lasted more than a half hour in length. So hopefully that made up for it. But to close out the show, our last few segments here.
Packers news of the day.
On this Wednesday, the biggest news that's probably come out since our last episode of Railbird Central back on Monday, you know, we reported back then that Jarrett Bush had been suspended by the NFL. And a lot of people, I think myself included, in fact, the original report kind of suggested that, Bush's suspension by Howard Balzer had kind of been related to his arrest during the offseason. And apparently that's not the case. According to Rob Domofsky of ESPN.com, Bush has been suspended for violation of the substance abuse policy. So obviously this had to happen while he was still a member of the Green Bay Packers. You're not tested after your contract expires. So just kind of a clarification for a little bit of old news. We knew he had been suspended, just didn't know precisely what for. And it, you know, I am kind of jumping to conclusions here, but we had learned via report in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel earlier this offseason that Jarrett Bush had surgery for a sports hernia this offseason, making me wonder, you know, whether he turned to HGH or something like that to help him recover. If you'll remember when that report came out, that Bush had kind of been dealing with this for like more than a year, really his last couple years in the NFL, kind of been dealing with this sports hernia, kind of around the hip area, their abdomen, and had been limiting him. Remember late in his career, he missed a few games there out on, you know, he was on the inactive list a few games as he dealt with that. So kind of unfortunate for him, but now being suspended for it, and once, you know, whether no matter what the suspension is for, this is kind of preventing you know, him from coming back to the Packers or the NFL, a roadblock, so to speak. And it's hard to see him coming back with the Packers, at least until his suspension is over after week four. Even then, I don't think it's going to happen by any means. Something that could happen, maybe if the Packers have injuries, we will see. But that leads us to
the day ahead
in the world of the Green Bay Packers. This Wednesday, Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre will appear on the ESPYs, the award show, on Wednesday evening. Even though it's been devised by ESPN, it's actually airing on ABC Wednesday night, I believe 7 o'clock p.m. Central Time. Aaron Rodgers has been nominated in two categories, Best NFL Athlete and Best Male Athlete Overall, kind of calling from all sports there. So we'll see if Aaron Rodgers wins, and we'll also see Brett Favre being a presenter at the ESPY Awards, something he alluded to during an interview with ESPN Wisconsin just about a week ago, that he would be doing this. And Favre claimed not to know what category he was going to present. So we don't know if he'll be presenting an award that one of these that Rodgers is nominated for. You know, there's many, many award categories. So maybe, you know, they're just going to have him do a random one or something like that. But would be interesting to see him, you know, hand the trophy over to Aaron Rodgers on a Wednesday night. So we kind of await that this evening to see if that'll take place. But that'll do it for today's episode of Railbird Central here at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. Thanks to Evan Wiener, author of America's Passion, for joining us on the show. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Whoa, we got a guest on Friday's show lined up. I'm excited for this one. Packers rookie linebacker James Vaughters will be joining us on the show on Friday morning. I'm excited to talk to him. Anytime we can get a current Packers player on the show, I'm excited about that, to kind of do a little bit of training camp preview on Friday morning. So excited about that. We'll talk to him then. 8:30 a.m. Central Time, the live edition of the show every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, podcasted and on demand later in the day. So we'll see you later, folks. See you Friday. Have a good day. I leave you today with a song called New Country Blues by the Emmett Nershey Band on Psy Fidelity Records. See ya. Go Pack, go.